Our next talk is by Raina Heaton of the Tunica Language Revitalization Project, Methods, Challenges, and Data Conflict in Language Recreation.
Thanks. Thanks everybody for coming. Today I would like to talk about some of the recent work I've been doing as part of the Tunica Language Revitalization Project, working with the older data, which you just heard a little bit about. Of course, dealing with older sources is something that documentary and other types of linguists, of course, come across very frequently, and the problems and good things associated with them. But there are several factors in terms of what materials are available that make this project somewhat more unique for Tunica. I'm going to discuss the relationship that we have with our materials and how that's going to affect our revitalization project. So, for some background, for anybody who wasn't just here for Judy's talk, Tunica is a linguistic isolate, first of all, so in terms of revitalization, there's no real option to look at other related languages to help us out, kind of on our own. The project began in 2010. The tribe came to us asking for help with revitalization, that's Tula Linguistics, and so it's an external project, not an internally generated one. And so for the past 3 years, we've been working to create materials necessary to do that. So we developed a practical orthography. We put out a book of stories as told Two Sisters to Eugene Camp by Mary Haas. And we're working on another book of stories, a dictionary for adults, a dictionary for children, pedagogical grammar, maybe a linguistic grammar, and of course, many, many teaching materials. So the important thing to take away from that for this presentation is that Tunica has no native speakers and hasn't for quite a long time. No one's memory, really. It has documentation, but we'll talk about what condition that is in. And there are no surviving recordings that are of any use rather than prosodic purposes. Apparently, sitting in attics in Louisiana during the summer does not do well with wax cylinders. So, the data that we have to work with, this is the main stuff. There's Haas's grammar, the dictionary, and the texts. Gatchett's field notes, which is a very full notebook in French and in English. So a couple articles published by Gatchett and by Haas. Gatchett's had a couple articles on the language. Haas's are mainly about Gulf and linguistic classification issues. Swanton also published a very small grammar, but mostly used Gatchett's material, so that's not necessarily new things. And then the Gatchett-Swanton vocab cards, which I'm going to talk mostly about today. So, Haas's materials are our go-to source for all of the revitalization. Because it's the most complete, really. She has a grammar, dictionary, and text, the Boasian trilogy. She's also a fantastic linguist, very well trained, the only linguist who really worked on this language. And she also had access to the prior materials, although it doesn't seem that she really incorporated them except for the dictionary when it came to lexical items that her speaker didn't know. So, this is just a quick sample of what her data sort of looks like. This is one of the texts from her book of texts. There are 22 of them in there. Most of them are not long. There are a couple that are a little longer. Like Judy said, he did multiple tellings, although they were mostly very, very similar. As you can see, there's no parsing, no glossing. There's a free translation that goes with this, but it's taken a considerable amount of processing to get this into workable formats. And of course, this is her IPA orthography. And her sources are, of course, fantastic. Do not mistake me. But the data does have several shortcomings in that were not really under Haas's control. For instance, the language was in a severe state of obsolescence when she got to it. So this has been called salvage field work, and this is what she had. So first, this is Sisostri Chigant. He was the last Tunica speaker, and he was a semi-speaker. He hadn't spoken language in about 20 years, probably. Also, his first language was probably French, although he spoke French, English, and Tunica. Ha said that, indeed, I often had the feeling that the Tunica grooves in Ichigan's memory might be compared to the grooves in a phonograph record, where he could repeat what he had heard but was unable to make up new expressions of his own accord, which means elicitation sound, basically. So that's difficult. Next, the repeating of texts mean we have only narrative data. The grammar was based on this data, the text is dated, the dictionary is this data. So there's no variety. You don't get things like greetings, colloquialisms, or any sort of conversational discourse, which is so important. There's a lot of work, you know, in the language documentation literature talking about I have to get different genres to document it and be very careful to get the whole spectrum. And I feel like this is the case in point why that's very, very important. The narrative style also leads itself heavily in terms of structure to third-person singular masculine forms. So in terms of variety of language we're used to looking at, even if we have the other inflectional pieces and stuff, we're used to seeing third-person masculine, sometimes plural, occasionally feminine singular. It doesn't give a wide variety of stuff to look at. And also in terms of register and genre, structurally we don't know what defines formal narrative and then non-narrative, because we have nothing to compare it to. We have no idea what non-narrative looks like, so I'll just tell you about narrative. Okay, and then there are the descriptive holes. Again, probably because these sorts of things didn't come up in her data set, and she couldn't ask about them, and so how would you ever know? But this is very important to us for revitalization purposes, because you do have to know how to do everything that you could ever want to say to make this a productive language. So. First are undiscussed constructions that just aren't in the grammar at all. So relativization, can you relativize anything but a subject? Can you have direct object relatives? We have no idea. There are only subject relatives in the data. Also, an interesting, you know, point that seems relatively insignificant but is actually relatively important, can you have a definite article and a degenerative? They are the same, well, they look to be the same morpheme. They're both ta prefixes. And a huge number of nominals are formed from verbs by adding ta. But you never ever see anywhere in the dataset ta something. So can you say the dancer? You think you should be able to, but we don't know because it's not in the dataset. Also, multiple WH questions don't appear in the data. But maybe they could do them. Just because it doesn't appear in the very limited corpus that we have doesn't mean that it wouldn't have been possible. This next one is one of my favorites. Forms only attested once or twice. This is a really cool example. the root is uru to whoop. He keeps whooping as he goes, it is said. This has the two in red are both auxiliary verbs / agreement markers that have been shoved on to the end. And it's very rare that this is the only time I've ever seen that you get two of them. You usually only get one. But can you do this productively? No idea, because there's only one example in the entirety of the text body. So, one of the more perplexing problems is the observation versus rule. She wrote a very good descriptive grammar. So when she saw different constructions being used in different contexts that meant roughly the same thing, she would describe all of them. But that tells you nothing about how to use them. And this is a really big problem for us, because we're trying to productively form things to make lessons. And if you have many options and no idea how to choose which one to use, you're like, no, tell me, someone tell me. So the most problematic and common of these is the motivation for auxiliary conjugation versus non-auxiliary conjugation in terms of subject agreement. So the T is the third feminine singular, like, normal, I guess, subject marking. It's normal. And then ahi is the third feminine singular of uhki, to live, exist, be. But it's there providing subject agreement. And you can see from the translation that in terms of semantics, you can't tell here what the difference would be, why there would be a choice for ti versus ahi. Structurally, there's no motivation for the change, which means it would have been semantic. Oh, and it's also not lexical, sorry. Kara and hiku function the same way. So this is one of the questions I was hoping to find out by digging into older data, which I'll talk about in a second. And then there's little evidence for certain morphemes or constructions being more productive than others. It's often that she didn't know when you should use one or the other. For this instance, imperative postfixes, she just straight up said, I don't know when you use these. I don't know what the differences are, but here they are. So you have a choice of n, ki, or chan. So those problems in light, we turn to the older materials in hopes of finding answers, which opens up a whole another host of problems. So the Gatchiswantan material, in terms of the cards, were originally by Gatchett. He collected the information in about 1880. Swanton came around about 20 to 30 years later and revisited them. He typed them and then added notes on top of them, just penciled it in. Gatchett, when he elicited them, he worked with William Eli Johnson, and Swanton, when he went over it, worked with Eli Johnson and Hulsine Cheeky, who was presumably quite a fluent native speaker. Very excitingly for us, this data seems to be mostly elicitation, which is very, very good considering that's what we don't have, and some textual data. I analyzed about 600 vocab cards over several months, which meant 1,100 sentences. So our corpus has almost doubled, I think. There are, as you can see here, about 1,700 cards. Yes, I just haven't looked at all of them yet. So, to deal with this data, because it's just on, Patricia nicely went to the Arts and Smithsonian Archives for us and took pictures of all of these cards. So they needed to be re-digitized in a more usable format. So what I did was I transcribed all the sentences into Word. I decided not to use Elan because there's no reason to time align things when there's nothing to time align. And then I would go through and flag all the examples that looked like they would be helpful, like had interesting syntactic structures or something. They looked like they could give us something we didn't have. And then parse all of them using anything I could from existing materials, so i.e. Haas, and what I'd learned in the past 3 years of working on the project. And then look for systematic structural similarities in the hopes of solving the questions that I just talked to you about. So, this is an example of one of the cards. It is not the best, but it is also not the worst. So you can see it's just Tunica in IPA-ish orthography, and an English translation, and then written over by Swanton. The V's here are Hulsine Cheeky. You see his contributions to it. The rest of you just have to assume is Johnson.
There's a J.
There's a J?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so. It looks scary, but this data is very, very essential. First of all, mainly because it's non-narrative data. It's just a whole different genre, and so I hope it solves your problems, and it's not the same thing. Also, we get paradigms that Judy was talking about us needing. And in the paradigms, you find occasionally some very useful things you didn't even know you needed. Like this card is the conjugation for the deictic determiner. Didn't know you had to conjugate it for number and gender. But apparently you do. We also got many, many useful sentences, which are great for the lessons and so people can use generally, you know, phrases you need all the time. So like, how much does this cost? I am 12 years old. What are you doing? No one knows. Fun phrases. Also, and just in general, the corpus is so small that we need all of the information we could possibly get. I mean, it's ideal for any situation, but for us, this is really essential. Okay. And then the problems with it. One of the most common problems, or the first problem you run into when working with legacy material is going to be the orthography. So for this particular set of choices, he almost never recorded glottal stop, neither Swanton nor Gatchett, and it's phonemic problem. Glides are often omitted intervocalically, so you get very condensed looking things that when you try to parse, you realize that things are just missing, which you get better at over time, but I mean, that's a pretty big difference. Also, he collapsed some vowel contrasts, so O and A, and A. He also wrote voice stops, which looked weird for a while, but then I figured out they just aren't voice stops. They're all just the voiceless counterparts, so that's not bad. And then there are some interesting, probably French-motivated, consistent orthographical correspondences. So, the other thing is that Gatch and Swanton frequently would not agree on what the translation was supposed to be, which in situations like the example I have there is fine, because as soon as you figure out what the root means and you find it, you're like, oh, of course it's to drink. The dog drinking, it's not the dog barking. But if the lexical item, I couldn't find it in Haas, and Nothing else in the sentence would indicate which one translation over the other. You're basically stuck. Or you come up with something that you think makes total sense based on Haas's materials and it matches neither of the translations. And you go, okay, what now? What did I miss? And it's sometimes worse when the speakers do not agree. So this is one of the more perplexing examples. It will not be good luck for him versus something he does not like. And according to Haas, it should mean something like she punished him. And these things do not match up at all. And go, okay, not using that one. Okay, which kind of boils down to the problem that anything that isn't in Haas is difficult and to reliably identify. It's the same problem that we originally had with the Haas materials, that there's nothing to check it against. And so if something happens maybe once or twice in the Gashi materials, you have no way of knowing how to use it or what it is, really. And then there were some systematic conflicts with Haas's account of things, which is actually very interesting. This is a very, very good one. So Yahpa is a stative verb. For all stative verbs, Haas says that you have to conjugate them or have agreement via the inalienable set of prefixes. However, very, very, very consistently, 100% of the time, in the Gashit Swant materials, they use the inalienable prefix, which has some very interesting ramifications, which I will get to in a second. So, slightly more serious problems. It seems that Gashit probably was not far along in gathering his knowledge of Tunica when this information was gathered, because he does things like posit word breaks in the middle of roots, which is not a good thing. Usually, you know, that happens when you're, you know, looking at a language for the first time, but then you go back and revise it, and this did not get revised. And in cases like this one, it's relatively easy to tell, but in others, it was not necessarily. And then there's, again, the issue of speaker competence. Eli Johnson spoke Tunica, Biloxi, Choctaw, and French. His father left when he was very young, and so he grew up with his Biloxi-speaking mother. He tells his story slightly differently. He says that he grew up with his Biloxi-speaking mother, but then she died when he was 10 and he moved back to the Tunica Reservation. But in general, Haas quotes Yushigant saying this, that it was Yushigant's opinion that Johnson's principal language was Biloxi, his mother's language, and that his command of Tunica left much to be desired. Which is very unfortunate, considering when Gashit collected this data in 1880, there would have been tons of fluent speakers he could have worked with, but he picked the one who could be a French translator, I think. But there is hope. So there are still merits of this, in sort of, first that another native speaker reviewed this information. I don't know really Holcim Chiki's history, but when he went over it, the translations were the things he changed. There was never any edits to the Tunica, which, since he had an alternate translation, you know, at least he understood it. At least it was Tunica, which is encouraging. Also, we have to consider the types of mistakes that were not being made. So, paradigmatic mistakes, not made. Word order, pretty consistently described in Haas. And also very good that morpheme stem things worked out well. So if it required a certain series of morphemes, that was how it was. It's a causative, it got that sort of marking. So I have relatively good feeling that at least for the structural sort of things I was looking for, this is decently good data. So the things we discovered. First, most basically, I guess, that narrative Tunica narrative structure is defined by ani, the quotative postfix, at the end of a sort of intonational unit phrase, and hinyatich, beginning every new thought or utterance. Neither of these appear anywhere in the Gashit Swant book of data. Also, if you remember some of the questions from above, found that ki is the most productive imperative marker. Yay. We had actually picked that one for use in the lessons beforehand, so now we don't have to change it. Yes. Also, really excitingly, reduplication appears to have been a productive process. Haas describes reduplication as only being a product of the auxiliary verbs when they form their repetitive paradigm. But you can see here that the verb roots, the first CV, the first syllable, is reduplicated, and it gives it a, you know, kind of meaning you would expect from a reduplicated form. So papata, yayaku, and kukuchaka. Kukuchaka, yeah. She was crushing repeatedly. And then lastly, my favorite is that if you are willing to accept that the forms for stative conjugations in Gatchet and Swanton is correct, then you get a very clear active system of agreement split along stative and non-stative lines. So you can see that the subject here for transitive verbs is the same as the subject conjugation for intransitive verbs. And the objects also match the subjects of stative verbs, which is a very exciting result. And this the system was not at all transparent looking at the Haas materials. It's not how she analyzed it either. Okay, so what happens to this stuff now? Select discoveries are getting incorporated into the new Tunica language, and the stuff that I have learned from doing this will help inform the development of the language as we move forward. I sort of cheekily entitled this presentation Language Recreation, but I did that to talk about the two different types of revitalization. You know, the sort of, I guess, what everybody probably thinks about revitalization is taking a reduced speaker population and then helping create new speakers and spread into new domains. But what we're doing here is really a completely different animal. We are taking a language that has almost very little documentation and many holes and trying to fill them in the best ways possible so that we can give the system to people and say, please learn this. This is what you asked for. Because we need the ability to create, not just describe what is going on. And if we don't understand what we're doing fully, then we can't teach it effectively and it will drop out of the language anyway. So we really need to do this well. So this is all still a work in progress, certainly, but we've learned a lot and it will help us through Tunica in the future. Thanks.
How much interaction and collaboration have you had with other tribes that are trying to do similar work in salvaging work or reconstruction, whatever you want to call it?
Some, not a ton. You guys did Coshatta this year?
Well, there were 11 tribes at that meeting.
Okay, well, there are 11 tribes at that meeting. So yes, yeah, some, but it's not directly informing our project.
I have a lot of questions because I'm in the same situation
with
the Wapo language in California. Sorry. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. We're also doing with the Wapo tribe in California. There's also no speakers, and there hasn't been for about 20 years. Unfortunately, Wapo was apparently much better documented than Tunica, so we have a lot more to work with.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still gaps, especially in lexicon. And one thing that we ran into immediately was the linguists who were very careful about getting grammar and stuff were not very careful about getting things like greetings and pragmatic kind of information.
Right, yeah.
So have you guys figured out ways, I don't know if you have greetings or anything else that's recorded,
mm-hmm.
or politeness phrases or anything like that?
We have the basic greetings that we found on a vocab card, but that
nice.
Is, that's it. Did you guys have recordings?
We do actually, yeah.
Okay, well that's
we're fortunate
good.
For that, yeah.
Yeah.
So we get
information.
Yeah. So we were just kind of thinking about how to fill in those gaps through coining or through whatever. And Wapo
mm-hmm.
also has a few relatives to the Yuki languages, but they're not super similar. So
mm-hmm.
it's hard to, and those are actually even worse attested than Wapo. So it would be hard to get stuff from Yuki to fill in gaps. So we're kind of on our own for figuring out how to do that.
Yeah, we are too. We're dealing with it. It's going into the neologism sort of dictionary project, the lexical hole filling. And we're getting the structural hole filling.
Cool. Raina, you might mention Tikach in that.
Tikach?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, that's, sorry. That's true. I did. I created that one. That's,
nice.
Thank you. Yeah. It's from big and then lapuch. It's the very well. Yes. Anyway. So that's, thank you now. Yeah, Anna.
Yeah, I was actually wondering about your strategy for neologism creation. Who gets to set the paradigm for how words are built and then who doesn't?
Well, we're trying to use normal word formation processes as outlined in Haas. That's number one. I don't think we've made any neologisms, from scratch to say we're in the combining and resorting phase to, as long as we can. far as I know, that's really strategy, and just making them whenever we need them when they come up for lessons is kind of where we're at right now.
We run them by Donna as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Run them by the tribe.
Just in relation to Tukash.
Yeah.
Is thank you something that would have been said by Tunica people originally?
I don't know. Do you know?
Do other people working on Native
right,
American
see?
Languages, do they usually have a word for thank you? Australian languages usually don't, so I'm just wondering.
I know several of them don't.
Is that related to the word for good?
Sort of. That's how we did it, yes.
That's aerially, that's correct.
Yes, well, that's yes,
yeah.
That's why we did this.
So that's typical. That's similar to other languages.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it's just interesting because there's all these things that people want to be able to say because the culture is different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're having to make up words that the traditional speakers of language X didn't ever have cause to use.
Yeah.
They didn't say things like that. So
yeah.
There wasn't a word for it anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, we're kind of running with that. We have a pretty much monolingual English base going into this, and what we really want to do is create speakers. So with that in mind, we've kind of been developing things. It hasn't had any huge effects yet, but things like that, we definitely, yeah, words that wouldn't have been there will probably be there if they're in English. Yes. Yes.
Assuming you don't come across any new materials, when do you predict you'll be done? How long can you keep going before you kind of run out of things to analyze and come up with before you have to?
Well, there's that 1,000 more vocab cards. If you want to.
I got the next period free.
Yeah.
How did Mary record the stories? Do you have her like Yale notebooks where she wrote them in?
We don't. We are desperately trying to
you
get a hold of them. We've run into some problems.
Like you just have the typed manuscript?
We have the published textbook.
Notebooks have to exist somewhere.
They do.
So we know where they are, we just can't get them.
But they are having issues getting them to us.
Really? They're not archived, they're all just sitting in boxes,
yeah.
So they're reluctant to just hand them to us.
You couldn't go there and
go there with your camera.
Yes, that's on the docket for next time
we
get a grant.
Yeah, but we should talk.
Yes, we should talk.
We'll talk. This is
Yeah.
So what were all those accent marks, the vowels
yeah.
and pauses and stuff?
That's
how do you deal with
those? Intonation. That was her attempt to track the sort of phrasal melody. We sort of got rid of that. We straighted it into a set stress system to be more like English, speaking of making Englishy choices.
Right. It's just
Okay.